It's time for the Apple Watchcast. A new rumored rugged version of the Apple Watch may be on its way. The HomePod Mini has a secret sensor. There's a new security update for all your Apple devices you should do right now. And Mac OS X turns 20. Plus, using Apple Music, Apple speakers and headphones, and the Apple TV. This and much, much more. It's all coming up next on the Apple Watchcast. The Apple Watchcast is brought to you by the wonderful support of our Patreon subscribers. Become a patron of the Apple Watchcast, and for as little as a dollar a month, you can help us keep producing this show and get a little something extra in return, like access to bonus episodes, Apple Watchcast gear, and even be a guest on the show. So check out our page at patreon.com/applewatchcast to subscribe and become a patron of the Apple Watchcast. This is the Apple Watchcast, episode 373, recorded Sunday, March 28th, 2021. 10 turns 20.
It's time for the Apple Watchcast. Apple Watchcast, a podcast dedicated to the Apple Watch.
It's time for the Apple Watchcast, where we talk about any and everything Apple Watch, Apple's most personal and healthy device yet, and the number one watch in the world. I'm your host, Tom, and joining me is Vincent. Welcome to the show, Vincent.
Reporting live from the Suez Canal.
have a little problem there, don't they?
Just a little.
Just a little. Also joining us is Chris. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Yeah, we're not far behind you in Knoxville. We've got flowing rivers through the streets.
Oh, see, no, that's kidding. The opposite problem that they have. They got a blockage.
Yeah.
Have you seen all the memes? Have you seen the memes that have been going on Twitter? It's pretty funny.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, and it's not. You know, it's like
It's crazy how just a little thing like that, just a little thing.
But it's not little. Have you seen the size of that thing?
It's huge, but like it's just one thing could take down the global economy.
Right, but you look at it, and you're like, how do you move something like that? I mean,
oh my gosh, yeah.
You know, at first I thought, well, you know, unload it first, right? Make it lighter, but no, you can't do that.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Well, as far as the memes go, I'm like, go ahead, Vincent.
Yeah, no, what cracks me up is the fact that there's a lot of probably Apple products in there.
Yes.
People waiting for the delivery.
Is that where the AirTags are?
Yes.
The AirTags have caught. That's why they didn't have their event on the 23rd.
There you go.
Yeah, the guy with all the event signs that said March 30th are in there, so they couldn't have the event.
Yeah, that's what it is. wow. Yeah, it's been quite the week. We don't have a whole lot of great, late breaking stories to talk about. But we do have some stuff to get to, but first of all, cause I always forget, let's do listener feedback first. Cause we got some interesting questions this week. First one here is from, Bobby Hendricks. And Bobby says, hi guys. Don't you think Apple has the capability to add some type of solar power to the Apple Watch? Thanks for the great podcast. Thank you for your email. I don't know. I mean, yes, they have the capability, but the question is the viability of it, right?
I mean, yeah, you got to store it. You've got to. I mean, the last time I looked into solar power, it's just the overall efficiency of solar cells are just not great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I mean, it'd be fantastic. Though, didn't we have like a solar powered Casio back in the day?
Right. Yeah. Really?
Yes. I mean, come on. They did it back in the 70s. I think we could do it.
Do you have to put the panel on your back or something?
Yeah, I don't know. On your band? Do you have a solar panel band that would power the watch?
It works. It just takes a long time because
does it? Yeah.
The amount of like I have a Seiko solar powered analog watch that I have to keep pretty much in full sunlight for a little bit, a few hours a day. For it to work. I mean, for it to maintain a battery, but like.
And it doesn't do much, right? I mean, it's not as much as the Apple Watch.
Sure. Yeah.
As far as power drain,
The research into like that stuff, It's I'm not an expert, by the way. I just bought a electric car, an electric Mach-E, a Mustang Mach-E.
Oh, you did?
I put my order down. So that was going to be what I like next week. So I think I just got a little ahead of myself.
Okay.
The battery power, like for EV cars, and then using the sun to make power, it just seems like it's kind of hit a plateau. I don't know. Is it just I don't do a lot of research on it, but it, like you said, it's kind of slow and sluggish.
Yeah, they're getting better at it. I mean, right. Last time I looked at it was over a decade ago in terms of nanotech and making it much more efficient in terms of capturing photons, but it. It is just it's something that people are working very, very hard at. It has not hit mainstream for some reason.
But it's a great idea, Bobby. It is. I love that. I love that thought. I mean,
oh my gosh!
You know, there are watches that are self winding right by motion, right, kinetic, and some solar like you have, Vincent. But they don't do as much. They don't draw as much power, and I think that's the issue. You know, having to charge this practically every day right now.
Right.
Tells you how much
that would be great if you didn't have to charge ever.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they could somehow make that screen, you know, solar panels as well. I don't know if that's possible to see through it or how it would work, but anyway.
Oh, then you can, if you're like in the beach, you can like sell power that you're absorbing into your watch to other watch owners.
Yeah. That'd be great. Let's see what else we got here. Listener feedback. Craig says, my theory about HomePod discontinuation. He says, new product line will be HomePod Mini and HomePod Max in keeping with the current branding. As always, keep up the good work and keep the shows coming. Thanks, Craig. Thank you for your email, Craig. HomePod Max. Yeah, I can see that. Mm-hmm. It's either Max or Pro. Well, HomePod Pro. That's kind of weird.
That's the
Max one that comes to the screen. Well, there's an article about that.
Yeah, there is. It's coming up. But that's kind of why I wanted to mention this. Craig got this email in way before that article, so a little ahead of the curve.
Good for him.
Yeah. I think you're correct in thinking there as far as how the current branding would go. And then let's see what else we got here. This is from Brian. Ryan says, hey, Tom and gang, quick question that I thought you guys might know the answer to or could speculate towards. Why doesn't Apple make printers? Most printers are not very good. Apple could make a great one. What do you think? Best, Ryan in North Carolina. Thank you for your email, Ryan. Apple used to make printers back in the day. And I mean,
did they really?
Way back in the day. See, most people don't even know that.
I had no idea they made printers.
It was, they used to make a laser. They made several of them. One was a laser writer. That was like one of the first laser printers that cost, I think, double the price of the Mac at the time. It was ridiculous, the price of it. But, you know, working in graphic design, it was incredible that you could print something like this. It was a PostScript printer. Wait, I'm getting ahead of myself. Actually, prior to that, they had something called a style writer. You remember that?
Yeah.
Had an
ink cartridge with a ribbon, and you could it would print, and it was very dot matrixy. You know, very
was
rough.
That in the 80s, Tom?
This is late 80s. Yeah.
Late 80s. Yeah. Okay, that's why.
And you could with a particular device, a third party, and I used to love these kind of companies that would pop up. They came up with a way that if you bought their little device that you attached in place of the ink ribbon, it was a laser that would turn it into a scanner. And you any paper you fed into it, it would scan line by line into the Mac. And it was like one of the first scanners. Anyway, that's probably more information than you want to know. The point is Apple did get into that business, and they had a great partnership with Adobe as far as the PostScript printer goes. And they were huge, giant boxes that could do basic stuff. You could, you know, limited in memory and everything else. But at the time, there was no equal, right? And then they kind of got out of that business.
when other, I guess, competitors started coming up with other printers and other things. And they abandoned it, and they've never looked back. I think they held on to one for a while, a cheaper kind of printer. But it's been years.
I was never sure whether or not they actually manufactured it themselves or rebranded a Canon or something like that. You know, it's one of those things that they designed, the Canon actually manufactured.
Because they never looked very Apple-y.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't look like Apple would, like Johnny Ive had designed it, you know.
Well, I mean, they're low margin items. It's the replenishment of the ribbons and the toner that you make your money on.
It's the toner.
So it's
Well, but see, at the time for Steve Jobs, that had nothing to do with it. With him, it was the quality of the printout. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who's into typography, right? Graphics, and it had to be like dot perfect, and that's why they had the laser printer.
Right.
And after that, things, you know, if it couldn't be that great, that's probably why they discontinued them. But maybe it's time they get back into it. I don't know.
They're going straight to the eco side of things. I don't know if they want to print things anymore.
Go back to paper.
Kodak tried to make Kodak made a big swap in the early 2000s from, you know, they realized they were going down the tubes, and they hired a bunch of people from printing companies, and they tried to make printers, and look what happened to Kodak. But I don't know. Printers is a tough business, and the use cases has changed. I mean, the amount of printouts, no one really prints their PowerPoints anymore ever. I just think it's just depends on what you're using it for.
Well, I remember late 80s, early 90s, the prediction was that we'd have a paperless society, right? That was the beauty of computers. Not true. Never going to happen. There's always going to be a need for a hard copy like that. So they're here.
I mean, I'm probably 90% less paper than I was 10 years ago. I don't have paper for anything. If I don't need paper, I don't do it. I send everything back electronically.
Well,
everything I can.
My wife, has a degree in accounting and worked as a CPA for a number of years.
Yeah, say no more.
Must have a paper copy of everything stored and filed, you know. Put away. And that makes perfect sense. You always have a backup. Nothing will crash. Nothing will fail, right? Short of fire, you have a copy of something. Mm-hmm. But that's why I don't think we'll ever get rid of printers completely. And it's probably just too small of a market for Apple to touch right now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. Your wife printing out paper backups, you just need a good Canon laser jet for that, right?
You don't need anything special. So. Yeah, your basic. You know, we have a very small one that we travel with, you know, that comes in a little case. You know, that thing is awesome. I mean, it prints beautiful, and it's small. It's in a little tiny case, but we use it because we're on the road, and we get an order from someone. We can fill the order and print an invoice and mail the product to them, you know, on the road. So we needed some sort of portable printer. But you're right, Ryan, in the fact that that's what Apple does best is they take something that's kind of crappy and make it awesome. Like the phones used to be crappy, right? Until the iPhone, you know, they have that way of taking something and making it amazing.
You know, the funny thing is Apple and the whole Windows type of operating system came out of Xerox PARC, their research park, which
exactly.
Photocopying.
We could do a whole show about that, couldn't we?
Right.
Xerox. Oh, I've read so many books about that.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing.
Well, maybe Apple can make a 3D printer to 3D print their car.
Oh, there you go. That's
where they're headed. 3D printing with the VR. Yes.
Yeah,
forget the paper printing. That's easy. They're going 3D printing.
That's right.
Your new Apple Watch is ready. Here's the file. Print it yourself.
That could happen.
Print your own bands.
Nice. Yeah. I bet you can. I bet somebody has a file for that currently somewhere in the world.
Somewhere.
Yep. That's always a toy. I always think about getting at some point as a 3D printer, but never quite pull the trigger on that. It's like too much of a hobby thing, you know? All right, let's get into some of the stories we do have.
Tom?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was actually going to bring something up, and this is a good place to do it. My friend James, he and I kind of text back and forth. He's in the UK, and I met him, you know, through this show. He we've had a texting relationship for a long time now. Real good guy. He said he downloaded the beta 5 and the unlocking your phone with your mask works really well. He said it's very polished.
Nice.
And it works very well. So, I guess that's the beta 5. So we might be seeing it soon coming out and it works well.
You know, I would think within a couple of weeks we should be getting that.
Yeah.
I would hope that we're getting it that soon. But anyway, I just wanted to say thank you for all your emails and keep them coming. You send your comments to comments@applewatchcast.com and we'll continue to answer them. Okay, what's going on? Okay, let's kind of take these by the – we'll do some rumors first and then we'll get into the real stuff. How's that? Okay, first up.
Works for me.
From Bloomberg, says Apple is considering, and they put considering in quotes, considering new Apple Watch model with rugged casing aimed at athletes. Okay, so this is a new model, be focused on athletes and extreme climbers and hikers, and the casing of this watch would feature a rugged design with impact shock resistance and protective exterior similar to like a Casio G-Shock watch. And the idea of the rugged model is that it would feature like a rubberized casing that is perhaps not so elegant to look at, but would be less prone to scratching and damage. So what do you think about that rumor?
I thought G-Shock was just a branding thing. I just actually realized it.
Yeah, yeah. But do you think Apple would do this? Is the market big enough to do specific? They're calling it.
Well, maybe.
Go ahead.
I would say maybe they're trying to create the market for it, but could you do it with a really good case?
That's what I'm thinking. You know, there's a lot of great cases out there right now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I don't think they protect the glass as well.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, they might. Right. It's. If they do, it's just something over the top, which may be from scratching, but not from impact.
Right. So right now, and this article is from 9to5 Mac, they say that the aluminum Apple Watch is popular with runners and people who work out at a gym, but is less appealing for outdoor sports because it's easily damaged. The aluminum case and the glass display is easily scratched if the watch is bumped into a rock when climbing, for instance. They say the new watch would actually be an Apple Watch Sport in all senses of the word, with a rubberized exterior simply being more resistant to the elements, including having 50-meter waterproof rating. And Bloomberg says that the model is sometimes referred to inside Apple as an Explorer Edition watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that, however. Right now, if you get the stainless steel or the titanium version, you get the sapphire glass, which is very scratch resistant. Maybe not to the degree that you would need, though, if you're climbing rocks. I don't know.
I can totally see this. Yeah, why not? I mean, there's so many different sports out there, and people take their watch off or don't buy one. And then there's ways to, I'm thinking way out of crazy here, but a baseball player wears it. Why is it this plate, right? And he can bring in the pitching for him. I don't know. You know, how he swings. It can do all kinds of stuff for you.
Oh, no.
Major League Baseball let you.
Yeah, they don't let you do that, do they? You can't wear an Apple Watch.
I was just thinking they don't let you do that. So that's a bad example.
They had a few problems with that.
They should let you do that. Come on, it's technology.
They can't be trusted, though. If there's an opportunity to get an edge, they're going to take it. I don't know about this. I mean, initially Apple, you know, was the Apple Watch Sport. I mean, I don't know. It seems to me, I mean, they have the edition version, which is just a high end. And they had a super high end with the gold one initially. That totally failed. But to start getting into niche things with the watch, maybe that's the only place they can go with it at this point.
Yeah, I can see them selling the cases, but I'm not sure about the actual watch itself. I mean, you want to be able to have the rugged one and then, you know, switch to the evening wear one.
Yeah, right.
And not necessarily have to buy another watch.
Right.
I don't know. What about like firefighters, people who work outdoor, construction workers? Mm. All those people might want something that's a lot more rugged.
Mechanics. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
But the idea that right now a case will solve most of it. It's really, you know, and there are cases that have a cover, you know, for the glass. It's just makes it more. I mean, the thing that got me in this description was impact shock resistance. To me, that's more involved than a case, right? Shock resistance. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that could.
Well,
that,
yeah,
that could
I guess
be internal
so.
Too. I mean, yeah. Anyway,
and if you look at the case, I mean, it's obviously some kind of rendering of a case, mm-hmm. but the case itself could have that capability in it, Tom. The watch can be relatively the same, but it's the case around it. I mean, the same guts with a totally new fabricated case could have the shock resistance in it.
Right.
I don't know.
And I think
I'm just saying it's not.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think if Johnny Ive was still there, we wouldn't be talking about this. Because there's no way in the world he would allow that to happen. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't look good. Mm-hmm. And by the way, there's also a poll that was done by 9 to 5 Mac that says, would you buy a rugged Apple Watch? And the reply, the options for the answers were probably depends on the price and features. No, Apple Watch is durable enough. Absolutely would consider it. Or no, Apple Watch cases do the trick. And the number one reply was probably depends on the price and features. Hmm. Number two was no, that the watch is durable enough. And right now, number three is absolutely. Hmm. So I'll ask you guys that question. Well, would you buy a rugged Apple Watch?
No, I don't need it.
No, not really.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't fit the
target. Yeah, I don't fit the bill. Yeah. Right. But I think this is definitely product marketing research.
Yes, it is. But I have to say that the probably and the absolutely and the would consider it is, let's see, 20, 45, 55, is 63% of the respondents that's in favor of it. So,
Is this how you do market research? You guys are pretty marketing. Much. Is this throw it out there and see what happens? Yeah.
Could be. Yeah, they might do that. Yeah. All right. So maybe a rugged watch in the future here, this year. Let's move on. There's HomePod Mini stuff that's very interesting that apparently the HomePod Mini includes a room temperature and humidity sensor that could be enabled through software update. So this
is the sensor in the watch.
Yeah. Well, this is from, according to Bloomberg, and it's backed up by iFixit when they tore it apart, that there's apparently a temperature and humidity sensor that's designed to measure the current temperature and humidity of the room that the HomePod Mini is in. And it seems like that could be turned on with just software. And, you know, various third-party HomeKit products exists that can measure room temperature, but it would be convenient for HomeKit users if the HomePod Mini could do it without the need for another accessory.
And yeah, totally.
They say that the sensor is placed away from the main internal electronics near the power cable in the rear of the unit, which gives more credence to the idea that the sensor is meant to be measuring temperature of the room and not a safety sensor detecting overheating of the device, because that would be closer to the other internal components. And it says, like existing HomeKit sensors that can measure temperature, an Apple user can set up automations that fire when the temperature changes, such as turning on a fan when a room becomes warm.
Right.
So that would be pretty handy.
It would.
If your HomePod could sense the temperature within a specific room. I'm thinking of my Nest, which is in the near the kitchen. But all the way back in the bedroom, the temperature difference can be quite different. And if I had a HomePod Mini in the bedroom that said, it's too warm in here, kick on the Nest, that'd be awesome. Right?
Yeah. I think the Canaries, the home alarms and stuff like that have these sensors and they have them turned on.
Right.
Is it the Canary?
Several of them actually have that. The Ekobee has different room sensors as well.
Yeah, Ekobee is a HomeKit aligned, but whatchamacallit isn't
Nest.
Yeah. No, right. Nest, you can do it through that. It isn't. Nest isn't, but we got that that connector that Tom and I use. Right. It is really well. Canary isn't HomeKit enabled. Yeah.
Right. So I
wish
don't know.
It was.
It's interesting. I don't know why they would do that and not activate it.
Unless I'm wondering if it's just meant for diagnostics. Like they have it in there and they're like, hey, you're in a really warm area. This thing should not work or something. Or water damage or something like that.
Wouldn't it be more for to help the internal components to keep them from overheating? That you wouldn't put it near the outside of the device, right?
I figured that it's doing what it's supposed to do. It's detecting the room temperature and humidity for the operations of the device to make sure that you know it's ideal. It's not in some. It's not. You haven't put it into a sauna and decided that like, hey, this doesn't seem right.
Yeah. Okay. It's not next to your pool outside.
Right.
Yeah. Getting splashed on and sitting in the sun.
Well, my first impression when I was reading this is like, all right, let's get rid of thermostats. That's what I was like. Why do I need that extra device? If all the HomePods and HomePod Minis can control my rooms and go right to the AC unit and turn it on and off, or turn a fan on or off, or something else, I don't need a interim device.
Yeah.
That's what I was loving.
Yeah, that it could be a way to, but you'd have to have a way of turning on that thermostat, though. Still,
you do. You'd have to have some kind of connection, device, but maybe smart thermostats are coming down, or smart HVAC units got to come down the pike, and they can connect, you know, to your devices.
Well, this all kind of brings about the question that Apple doesn't really have a HomeKit path, right? The whole home. They don't really have an integration set up. It seems to me they just kind of did it, but there's no real thought into how all these things tie together. And that brings up the next story that came out this week, and that is that Apple may be exploring the idea of new HomePod models with a display and camera to compete with the likes of Google Nest, Hub Max, Amazon's Echo Show, and the Facebook's Portal, right? So those are devices that are that do more than the HomePod could do. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Basically.
And interact with your Apple TV.
With your daily life. Show you the weather, your calendar appointments, stream video, show you your cameras, you know, all that kind of stuff. Even as a smart digital picture frame, you know, whatever. There's a lot of things it could do. And, you know, if Apple had that in their HomePod, that you could do things like FaceTime video calling and, you know, with HomeKit integration, if they did actually put a screen on there in a camera. But
I was thinking this would be so awesome, but so expensive. True. The way that Apple would do it, they're like, it's an iPad strapped onto a HomePod.
Well, it's funny because this always comes up, but the first comment I'm looking at here says, effing fix Siri.
saw that.
Yeah, so it's like people would love it more if you just fix Siri. Well, Siri doesn't do as much as the others, right?
No. Well, it depends on is it Siri or is it the device that Siri controls?
It's Siri itself.
Combination.
I think it's Siri itself because Siri doesn't go out. Doesn't how do I put this? Isn't Siri more integrated locally? It doesn't go outside of the device to get to work.
Maybe I'm thinking wrong here. Siri is the interface into the device, and the device has to have all the capabilities that you want it to do. So is the problem Siri or the fact that the device can't do everything you ask it?
I think it's Siri. I think it's Siri itself. It doesn't matter what device it's in. If it's on my phone, my watch, and the HomePod, Siri is Siri and can only do – and we're just activating devices everywhere now as we speak.
I remember like voice control when that came out first. Everything operated in the phone itself. But when Siri became kind of basically cloud-oriented, like if you disconnect – any device from the cloud, Siri stops working. And so, I mean, I think the back-end processing or whatever it is to figure out what you're trying to say. I had quite a conniption last night when I was barbecuing outside, and was trying to tell Siri to turn off the timer that was going off. I was this weirdo yelling at this device, at my watch.
I've done that.
Out of the backyard.
Yep, totally done that.
Oh, I could have just hit stop, but I didn't.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's there is an issue. And I think it has to do with the fact that it's more private, right? It's the Apple's not sharing all this data. You know, when you talk about Google and the others, they take what you say, all the queries, and they combine them all together to make it smarter. That makes sense. But you are sharing private information by doing that. Apple doesn't do that. That's why Siri is not quite as intelligent and can't do as many things as these other devices do. So it's a trade-off. What do you want? You want security or you want, you know, it is kind of creepy to think that when you use a Google Nest or whatever, that they're taking that data and combining it with everybody else who asked that question, you know? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, what's the number one response that Siri gives is like, here's what I found in the internet for X, Y, and Z, right? That's it's always just goes to the internet and lists you list stuff out when you're like, no, I want the actual data, right? Tell me something.
Which like, actually makes the idea of having a screen on there much of a better idea. If you think about it though, the HomePod Mini, isn't the screen on the HomePod Mini a little bigger than the original HomePod?
That on top?
Yeah. Is it bigger?
I haven't compared them.
It's brighter or it does more. Something about it is better than the original.
Really?
Yeah. So they did make some improvement to that. It does have a screen. It's just kind of silly where it is. Being on top, you can't really see it or interact with it. But, oh well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Again, all rumors. Speaking of rumors, we mentioned this last week just in passing, but John Prosser had mentioned about this app, this 23rd date for an Apple event, which was this past week. And he said, if it doesn't happen, I'm shaving my eyebrows. Well, it didn't happen. And guess what? He followed through. He shaved his eyebrows off. He did it.
Got to do it.
He did it on YouTube.
Good for him.
Yeah, live. And he also tied it in with a charity. What was it?
Yeah, I saw that.
It's a Wigs for Kids charity, the nonprofit. So good for him for actually following through and doing it. but I will say that his what is his percentage now? Currently, his record of getting things right is at 78.2%, and now it's going to drop even further because of the March 23rd issue.
And the people that told him about it are being fired.
More than likely. Yeah, we think that it may have been a sting operation to root out who at Apple was doing that, which makes sense. You know, you don't want to do a sting on a major product or something big coming out. You don't want to take that chance. But just on the, maybe Apple was going to do their normal event and some for whatever reason it got moved to April. But that somebody at Apple said, you know what? Everybody's expecting it in March. Let's use this as the perfect opportunity to find out who's leaking something. And that may have been what they did. Unless this coming Tuesday, which would be the 30th, right? Unless Apple has a surprise event then, it's going to be April. So.
Or just a release like they did a couple of times last year. But
right.
I still like the events a little better.
Because something's coming. We have to have, you know, we got new software updates coming down, you know, getting very close to being released, which usually happens around the same time as the devices. We got to have some new iPads here coming out at the least, you know, something new there. And the Air tags are just going to be, I think, perpetually forecast in every event from now on until they're released.
The perpetual teaser.
Yes. Until they're finally released. Speaking of updates and software, Apple did release WatchOS 7.3.3. Did you guys update?
Yes.
It did.
Yes.
Last night it did it and my watch went dark and I had no idea what was going on.
Okay. Well, this comes only 3 weeks after 7.3.2. And as we all know, 7.4 is in like its fifth beta and is imminently released in the next week or two. So the fact that this came so quickly, and it also came along with an update to your phone OS, iPad OS, and I'm not sure about the Mac, and maybe Mac as well. But the fact that Apple did all of those that quickly, it's a very, very important security fix. Okay, they're saying it's a vulnerability that has been actively exploited, which means this isn't like, oh, we discovered something that could happen. This is something that has happened. So if you have not updated, do so immediately. Very important.
That was my impression.
Yeah.
When I saw that come in, I said,
Right.
Security and weak. I thought it was a week or two like that. And I said, I'm doing this. So
yeah, it's something that doesn't happen that often. And we usually say keep up with your updates, but this is one I would say go out and do immediately. Make sure it's done.
Yeah, I dug into it, what the actual issue was. I mean, in terms of the security support document, it's cross-site scripting, which you see as XSS in the security world, which allows basically, you know, a third party to inject in commands via a trusted site. And so it is a way for, you know, basically a device to be exploited or private data to be exfiltrated if the browser allows it to run. Because the browser is basically going to essentially execute any command that it gets sent. And so if a third party can somehow intercept or interject a command, it is a bad thing.
Yes. Now I did this update. First I was doing my phone and I said, well, I'll just do my watch on the watch. And when I went to install it, then I got a pop-up on the phone that said an error occurred and could not update your watch. I looked back at my watch and it was doing the whole Apple logo and then the tick mark, like it was updating. Which was weird. I got that message on the phone, but the watch actually did update. So,
it's funny because now the watch can render a web page, so it has to
either that or,
as well for this or
that,
WebKit,
or that was the exploit, and I've been maybe that was it.
Yeah,
no,
Vincent, these kind of things, Vincent, is this something that's always been there, or as they make more and more changes, it just, you know, opens up as they make more changes to the software? Or is this something that's always been there and they just find these things ongoing?
Yeah, cross-site scripting it's a common issue. And as you develop, you know, more and more specialized techniques for exploiting the vulnerabilities inside a web browser. Because a browser, like we're saying, it just basically takes commands and renders whatever it sees, right? But being able to say, wait a minute, this is actually coming from another source that's hijacking or piggybacking on another, like a trusted site. And it's a very common exploit, but it's something that they have to kind of maintain and keep up with.
Yeah. Yeah.
What does 0-day exploit mean?
0-day means that there has not been an issue, a patch for it. Like they discovered it. This is day zero of that exploit being discovered.
Oh, okay. I didn't know what that meant.
And so nobody has a fix for it.
Ah, gotcha. So that's not this. They got this fixed.
Yep.
All right. So definitely update all your devices, your iPad, your phone,
definitely.
And your watch. Update them if you got them. all right. Next, Stanford has a new study. This is interesting. This, I think, is a study as to whether or not there can be a study. It's kind of proof of concept, but... they use the Apple Watch and determine that you can accurately assess frailty using activity data. So they published the results of this. This study focused on functional mobility of cardiovascular disease patients. And the data suggests that iPhone and Apple Watch can accurately assess frailty both in clinic and at home. So the study was funded by Apple. consisted of 110 Veteran Affairs patients using an iPhone 7 and an Apple Watch Series 3. The data was collected through a study app called VaskTrack, as well as passively collected activity data. Study used six-minute walking test score, or what they call a 6MWT. This was added in watchOS 7 and is described as a golden standard to evaluate functional mobility of a patient. So the 6MWT is a common measure of frailty in the health industry, and the scores are indicative of a healthier cardiac, respiratory, circulatory, and neuromuscular function. Okay, this is all according to Apple. So this test was conducted at home, the six-minute walking test, and then they compared the results to their in-clinic performance of the same test. And what they found out was that that the Apple Watch can accurately assess frailty with a sensitivity of 90% and specificity. I can't say that.
Specificity.
That word.
Specificity.
Yes, of 85% in clinical setting. In an unsupervised setting, the Apple Watch can accurately assess frailty with an 83% sensitivity and 60% specificity.
Specificity.
So, right. That's hard to say. So therefore, they concluded that the watch can serve as an accurate predictor of frailty based on this performance. So like I said, they're not really pulling data from this to get a conclusion other than the fact that the watch and phone together can do this. Mm-hmm. So that people could actually, I love this, that people can actually then monitor themselves outside of the clinic at home accurately with the watch. That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's another little thing that the Apple Watch can do from a medical standpoint that's fantastic.
It is pretty crazy. We're surrounded with all these sensors. The watch,
yes.
The phone, the HomePod. I mean, man, they can infer everything around you. He's like, it's warm in here. You're shaking. What's going on?
Your heart rate is really high.
Yeah.
Well, you're watching a good movie. That's why.
Yeah. It is funny how we've very quickly become used to them. Mm-hmm. Like it's no big deal. Not that long ago, you couldn't have done any of this stuff.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You're surrounded by microphones too.
Yeah. But this just keeps showing or proving how after Steve Jobs passed, how Tim Cook and his team has pretty much turned a lot of their efforts to health and continue to. It's not like they did it for a while and then, you know, stopped. Everything they're doing continues to push the envelope, which is great.
Yeah, and this story made me think of you find things you don't know, right? You didn't know you didn't know this, right? And now you know it, and you can work through it. And then it also made me think, which you were just kind of talking about, Vincent. I'm like, I'm just going to be walking through my house, and it's going to say, bing, 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 go to the doctor for this reason. I mean, we're almost getting to a point where it can kind of assess what you're doing. And then I was joking, you know, them to say, oh, wait, you're watching your college sports football game? You're okay. You're just watching a sporting event and your heart's going up and down and you're getting nervous and stuff, you know. But I could see that happening.
No, it is interesting because, like, Apple's doing this for health and privacy, kind of what you were talking to Tom. But, like, if you think about, like, if Google, which is mostly advertising-backed, all this information goes towards feeding more ads.
Right.
You know, instead of telling you, hey, you need to go see a doctor. It's like, hey, why don't you take some Tylenol? I mean, it's a different experience, you know?
And it happens to be on sale at your CSV pharmacy right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
The drone will deliver tomorrow.
Click here.
Yeah, exactly.
See, that's the cynical way of looking at it. Yeah.
But could have gone that down the route. It could have completely gone down that route.
Well, isn't that Wally, right?
Yeah, B&G, by and large. Yeah,
yeah, we're just
B&L, I guess. Yeah,
we're just sitting around waiting for the new color. Yeah, it's like.
But by the way, Tom, I don't know if I would necessarily not like that either. You know, hey, you realize you're low on this because or something, and you know, we can get it to you in 2 hours with a drone. I'd be like, all right, save me a time, you know, trip to the store. Yeah. I don't know. Was it last week or 2 weeks ago? I said, I bought something on Amazon because it'd be here tomorrow morning versus driving 15 minutes to Best Buy. I mean, I was like, why do I need to do that?
Well, so yeah, the pandemic has kind of changed our perception mm-hmm. of what's possible. I don't think that, you know, people would be ordering as much stuff online, obviously, if it wasn't for the pandemic, but it's kind of proven that concept that it works, you know?
Yeah.
And they're doing a ton of it. All right. Okay. This next, I don't want to get too far into this. I could do a whole show on this, but you know, we talked about the whole Intel ads with Justin Long last week.
Yep.
Attacking the M1 chip. Well, now the CEO of Intel is calling it competitive fun as he tries to win back Apple's business. So during their quarterly earnings call, Intel revealed new ways it hopes to win back Apple's business, including major investments in chip production. Specifically, they're saying, we will build a foundry to make your chips. Not that we have a foundry, but we plan on building one. Mm-hmm. And that completely ignores the fact that I think so far the best that they can do is 14 nanometers, and Apple's already going down to 3. So there's no mm-hmm. way in the world they could even get close to it, to affect a foundry they haven't even built yet. So I don't know what's going on at Intel, but on one hand, they're attacking Apple and the M1 chip. And on the other hand, they're saying, oh, no, we want to do business. It's all in fun. You know, I don't think Apple didn't even respond to these ads that they did. So I don't think it really matters. Apple has,
right.
I think Apple's moved on. Mm. They're like, we've been waiting 15 years for you to give us chips that are low power and meet our needs, and you haven't been able to. So we found someone who can. And that's basically it. Mm-hmm. TSMC, or Taiwan Semiconductor, is the one that is doing it for Apple now. This is all very interesting that the CEO is saying this. It makes me think that they're kind of headed for disaster here, Intel. Because internally, it doesn't sound like they got their act together at all.
Yeah, I mean, how many years ago they were like the only game in town, or one or a small number of game in town. And just like every other mature businesses, if you don't innovate and change, other people are. And that's what's happening around them. And right. And that response sounded to me like a Monday morning 8 a.m. meeting with the CEO to say, what should I say? Because the ads kind of stunk over the weekend. That's what that sounded to me like.
Well, they backfired.
Yeah.
I mean, Intel's campaign with Justin Long puts more attention on the M1 and does nothing but hurt mm-hmm. Intel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me, and bear with me, there's a Glory Days story coming. But it reminds me of a great advertising story. And I may have said this on the air before, but I think it's worth repeating because this is so similar. But when our agency went to pitch Builder Square, which was at the time like the same size as Home Depot was, they had Tim Allen as their spokesperson. And their current ad agency was able to get him to do commercials. And Tim Allen at the time had the number one sitcom, and his character was a do-it-yourself guy. It all seemed to make perfect sense. But we knew it wasn't working for them as far as awareness goes. So we did some intercept interviews where we sent out some people, basically interns, to stop people who were out shopping and ask them some questions about this. And we asked them if they were familiar with Tim Allen, if they had seen, you know, him in a commercial, and if they responded yes, we asked them who that commercial was for. And I think over 90% of the respondents said the commercial was for Home Depot. So Builder Square was spending millions on a campaign that was helping their competitor. And the reason was that Tim Allen's show was called Home Improvement, much closer to Home Depot than Builder's Square. Yeah. And I think the same sort of thing is happening with these Intel ads. Justin Long is known as a Mac, literally, in the old commercials. And all these spots do is bring attention to the fact that there's now a new M1 chip out there in the new Macs. because they're done so poorly. Oh, and the kicker, by the way, on that whole thing, those Intercept interviews that we did them in a Builder Square store with their own customers. And that's what helped us win the business. We were like, you're throwing money away on this. And I think the same thing's happening with Intel. I got a very bad feeling about this. In fact, there was an article, I think there was some BGR that says Apple's M1 chips might be the beginning of Intel's nightmare. Mm-hmm. And it talks all about the competitors, and specifically Microsoft, using ARM chips and Samsung, and how those are the real competitors they should be worrying about, as well as Apple. But
yes, certainly
that's what's going to bring them down. They can't compete. They can't get there. And this is not the response you want from a company that's in crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they've been riding on their, like you said, their dominance in the category. And I think there's going to be a day people are going to look back and say, what was Intel? What?
Yeah. Well, Tom, don't you guys do the, what do you call it when you put people in a room and watch and get their feedback? All of a sudden I'm forgetting the
focus group.
Focus group. I mean, do you think they did focus groups and they just did them with like Intel people? If they threw a bunch of Apple people in there and said, hey, watch this, and they would get this feedback because it was immediate when it hit to market. How does it even get to that point?
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends on the agency whether they did any focus group testing. I'm sure they had one heck of a pitch. They said, oh, we got Justin Long. We got, we're going to go back to the, but most people don't remember those spots. I mean, the age group now, that was so long ago. And, it's been all about mobile ever since, not about computers, right? That's what,
they might've got a better,
go ahead.
So they might've got a better ROI by just, paying Kylie Jenner $1 million to put on her Instagram. Hey, I just bought a new Intel based computer. Done.
Well, the problem
is a billion people seeing that.
The problem is they're not focusing on Intel. They're focusing on the competitor, right? They're talking more about what the M1 can't do versus what can Intel do for me, right?
Yeah.
It's the wrong focus. It's completely the wrong focus.
And that's what I was trying to get at. It's the wrong focus. I mean, you want to sell your chips in computers, and just get use the outlets that are out there to do that. This kind of dug down in the technical details, and a lot of us aren't even thinking about that.
Right. And I think part of the problem here is there is no story to tell. What would you tout? I mean, when everybody's starting to pass you by and making you look slow in this field, what can you possibly say, that would make people, I don't know. At that point, you almost have to do a more remind people of the name Intel and the brand, and they'll think more positively of it versus attacking a competitor. I don't know. Anyway,
I'm just sitting by the sidelines and enjoying the drama.
Yes, as a play, but
the
it's kind of
thing it, is it's, there's a bad breakup somewhere that happened.
Yes,
and somebody got rubbed the wrong way. But I do enjoy the names that they have for these CPU cores. this Firestorm and Ice Storm for the M1s and Cryo and Zen. It's very cool naming. I want to be a part of that.
You want to be part of the naming group?
Hey, can I ask you a question? Can I ask you guys a question? So Tom, I open up the articles that we're looking at and we're talking about. And when I opened this up yesterday to read it, it didn't have this. Now at the top of this article, it says Mach-E. Ford's Mach-E.
Oh, I'm seeing that too. I'm seeing it too.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, really?
It wasn't. I was wondering if I triggered that because I talked about it.
Oh, no. And you didn't trigger it because you were looking it up online or anything like that. I think they just happen to be – it's a tech thing, so they're pushing it top of this article. Yeah. Mach-E V versus gravity is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah,
Interesting.
Yeah, I'll tell you about it next week. That'll be my what I like next week.
Okay.
Awesome car. I can't wait to tell you about it.
All right. Speaking of the history in the past and computers – this week was the 20th anniversary of Mac OS X.
Mm.
Isn't that incredible to think about? 20 years of Mac OS X. And this article, this is from 9to5 Mac, and they're talking about, I think it was Jason Snell of Macworld wrote that basically it was an act of desperation by Apple. And I don't know if people realize that about what was actually happening back in the 90s with Apple, that, you know, Apple created the whole personal computer revolution and the whole graphical user interface, all of that. But by the 90s, they were behind, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, the operating, as he described it, the operating system that originally had been designed to fit on a small memory footprint and run one app at a time, its multitasking system was problematic. Clicking on an item, and I remember this, clicking on an item in the menu bar and holding down the mouse button would effectively stop the entire computer from working. Its memory management system was primitive. Apple needed to make something new, a faster, more stable system that could keep up with Microsoft, which was coming at Apple at the time with Windows 95. Mm-hmm. And he said basically by 1996, Apple had given up in a spectacularly humbling moment for Apple. The company began searching for a company from which it could buy or license an operating system, or at the least use as a foundation for a new version of Mac OS. The company's management, and at the time it was CEO Gil Amelio, clearly had come to the conclusion that Apple itself was incapable of building the next generation Mac OS. Mm-hmm. And then he says, we all know what happened next, right?
Oh, yeah.
Which was Apple in 1996, December of 96, bought Next Software and actually brought back Steve Jobs. And Next Software became Mac OS X.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he says, when we celebrate the 20th anniversary of Mac OS X, it's important to realize what we're celebrating. We're celebrating a software release that was the culmination of Steve Jobs' return to Apple. We're celebrating an operating system we still use two decades later, but we're also celebrating the foundation of iOS, iPadOS, tvOS, and watchOS.
That's a great story.
Isn't that great?
Wow.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's just,
it really is.
You know, when you really think about it. And then I'm looking at these images of what it used to look like. You remember Aqua?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I loved Aqua. And that's,
I don't.
That's the look of it. It was this bubble, kind of like semi-translucent look to everything. All the buttons were round.
The water drop, yeah.
Bubble.
I think every graphic designer had to figure out how to do that.
Yes, I was one of them. Everything had to look like that for a while because Apple led the trend, you know. And they still do. When they come out with stuff, people still try to copy what they look like. But yeah, Aqua was amazing. I was so gung-ho on OS X, and I remember in the, at the agency, and it was come on, it wasn't that great the first version, and but I defended it like crazy. Everybody was like, that's not usable. We're gonna switch to it yet, you know. It took a long time.
You're a visionary, Tom.
Yeah,
you're a visionary.
I was like, man, but look at it, it looks beautiful. But yeah, it was exciting. That was an exciting time, and it is hard to remember that that's where it started to what we have today, which is why I get a little upset when I see some of these new icons coming out of the Mac, you know, that just look horrible. It's like, what happened to the beautiful stuff that they used to design as icons? It's funny. I'm looking at this screenshot, and I'll put a link in the show notes to this just so you can see this one page. It's Mac OS X from 19... I didn't even have the date on it. I can't tell. This is a general copyright. But at the bottom in the dock is an icon for Sherlock. It's got the Sherlock hat with the magnifying glass.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yes,
I didn't know what that was.
That's Sherlock that we talk about all the time.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's it.
The other thing is 20 years ago is still past the year 2000. That's what's even more amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Not these days.
Yeah.
But I love that. All right. And
it looks good. It looks good. I mean, that's a good screenshot.
And 20 years later. I mean,
yeah.
So OS 10 turns 20.
So I wasn't an Apple guy back then. So OS 10 was the first version. It wasn't OS 1.
No. It went from 9 to 10.
Oh, okay.
And we've had 10 ever since, right?
Did it go from 9 to 10? Or it went from 8.
Did it go 8 to 10? Did they skip 9?
All right.
I thought they skipped 9, and they did the same thing when they went to the phone.
They might have skipped 9. Yeah.
All
right.
Yeah.
But it's a 20th anniversary of Mac OS 10.0. Mm. But that's funny. Nice. 10 turns 20. I love that.
This there week. You go. There's your marketing.
There yeah. it is. Isn't it beautiful? That's great. All right. Moving on. One last thing. I just wanted to mention this because I thought it was really cool. And this is what happens when Apple doesn't design something the way you think they should. This was from, okay, I got to give him credit. Who was the person that gave me this tip? Eric Larson sent me an email with a link to a, where is this? This is Kickstarter. It's called the Max Stand. And this is a charging stand for your AirPods Max that you simply set them down in a standing up position and they charge.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Pretty Apple. Cool. I thought, I looked at the photo and I'm like, wait, it floats?
No, it doesn't. They're a little deceiving with that. But you watch the right. video and you can see how it how they stand them up. This is something Apple should have put in the box. Honestly, it, mm-hmm. it's similar to your AirPods, your actual AirPods Pro and everything, mm-hmm. how they fit into a specific thing to charge. I love it. How much is this, by the way?
Much Where's the link cost? To the video?
There's a video here in the click on the Mac stand mm-hmm. at the top and it'll reload the page and you'll see everything.
Kickstarter edition is at 69 euros oh, or more.
Okay. No yeah. wonder I was reading yeah. this. A little confused by this story. I'm like, there's no pictures or nothing.
Yeah, yeah. The link now, I gave you wasn't quite right. But
give me a minute. Let me read this now. No, I'm kidding.
69 pounds.
Euros.
69 euros. Pounds. Sorry, euros. What is yeah. that in U.S.
That's
dollars?
About anywhere between 1.15 and 1.2. You know, so
100 bucks
conversion rate. Yeah, depending on the conversion rate, somewhere in there.
Right. So it's got a little tiny connector plug that goes into the AirPods so that when you dock it, it charges.
Yeah,
that's
pretty cool.
Pretty neat. As I'm saying, this is something Apple should have done. I'm tempted, but I've been burned by so many of these lately.
These the estimated delivery on this one is pretty, like, I guess if you scroll down further, the super early bird special is about 58 bucks or 49 euros.
Oh, okay.
Ships in May of 2021. So it's that's pretty close.
Either that or they're too ambitious because, you know, I've been burned by these. I can rattle off several wonderful products have yet to see the light of day.
Okay.
But, yeah. This
it looks very real. I hope these aren't all Photoshop, are they?
They could be. I don't know.
I won't be the first one to donate. I'll buy it when it's hitting the stores.
Well, that's the thing. Some of these never make it to the stores. Mm-hmm. They actually have them in all the colors, too.
Yeah.
Silver, blue, pink, green, space gray.
It's amazing.
It looks.
This is totally something Apple should have done. Yeah.
Exactly. I love it when the gap is filled so quickly by someone. You know, these just came out in December, and they've got a product going here.
I got the blue ones. Yeah, I see. Oh, wait. This article makes a lot more sense to me now because I did not click the top there when I first saw this. But yeah, it does look nice and it does match the colors. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, it's quite intriguing. Mm-hmm. And I already have a stand for mine, you know, a basic headphone stand that I just set them on. But it'd be nice to have them charged too, like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I may get it just for that.
The lightning and the magnetic and the MagSafe connector. I didn't get that. I didn't get that cable.
I don't the phone. Know. USB-C to magnet. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, I'm Googling Amazon
just,
now.
It's awesome. Just listener beware. It is. You are not. When you pledge, you do not purchase it. They are not bound to give you anything at all. Mm-hmm. That's why it's called a reward. If they happen to do it. Now their goal was only 41,000 and they're at 104,000.
Yeah.
So they more than reached it.
So that's the way, that's the same way as putting out the feeler of a, will you buy this? This is a much more firm feeler when you can double 2.5 times your pledge in real money. That means people are interested.
You know what? Apple should just buy these guys
and
start making this product. Anyway, just Just thought I'd pass that along. Go ahead.
Think they have a patent on it?
Oh, they probably have to, wouldn't you?
Yeah, they'd have to. Yeah, I mean, that takes time. I mean, if they put all this out there now, how long does it take to get a patent?
It's patent pending, I'm sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
I'm sure they filed doesn't mean they have it, but. Yeah. All right. Let's move on to what we like this week. And it truly is what we like this week. I don't think we have an actual product or app or anything to review. It's just kind of what's been going on this week. I think I'll go ahead and kick it off. I haven't started in a while. Like I said, I don't really have anything to review this week. No new app or watch band or charger or new tech gadget. This week was just kind of coasting along, enjoying all the gadgets and services I have. But I did have one observation to make, and that is how far Apple has come in the world of audio and speakers and how we actually listen. And I guess it makes sense if you look at the early success, you know, the creation of iTunes, being able to digitize, you know, your own music for the first time, being able to purchase music online, and having a way to store it all with the incredibly successful iPod. That revolutionized music and the way we access it, but not really the way we listen to it. The famous white earbuds that came with every iPod was a start, and what is now kind of an amazing selection of listening hardware. I really started to think about it. The original earbuds, you know, eventually went wireless, and the audio was improved with the AirPods. It took a long time to get there. And then we got the HomePod, incredible audio that kind of fills a room. But the AirPods Pro took it even further. Now we had noise canceling. And now we have the HomePod Mini and the AirPods Max. So it sounds like a lot of devices, but I actually use them all differently. So if I go for a run, I'm going to grab my Powerbeats Pro, okay, headphones, because they sound better than the AirPods Pro, and they won't fall out, you know, out of my ears accidentally because they're hooked around them. They're made specifically for that, and they sound better. Those are the ones I'm going to run with. If I'm working in the yard, like I've got a loud lawnmower going or anything like that, I'll use my AirPods Pro because of the noise canceling. Right. If I'm in the house and I just want to listen to something without disturbing others, either my iMac or my iPad or phone, I'll put on my AirPods Max. If I just want to listen to something in the house, there's the HomePod Mini. If I want stereo booming sound when I'm watching TV, I have the original HomePods. So I actually do use each of Apple's speakers in a different way. And it's great that most of the time, what I'm listening to usually finds the right device as I go, that automatic kind of handoff thing. You know, mm-hmm. Apple has come a long way with audio. And I even forgot to mention the great speakers and their laptops, the phones, the iPads, and even the watch. So, you know, this has been kind of a revolution of audio that Apple has done. If you think way back to the first Macs and everything, Steve Jobs put a big emphasis on sound and speakers at the time. But what Apple has done in the last, I don't know, how long have the AirPods been out? I want to say 5 years, 6 years?
4 or 5 years, yeah, something like that.
Has been a revolution. It's been amazing. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see what they do next. So, you know, hopefully we'll have something new in the HomePod arena, and we'll have new AirPods and everything else. But it just kind of dawned on me. I use them all, but for different reasons. Because the question is, why do you need more than one set of headphones? Well, depends on what you're doing with them. So anyway, that's what
AirPods
I found myself.
AirPods were released in 2016. Second generation is 2019. Okay. Yeah. So 5 years.
Yep. Wow. After the watch.
Yep. So that's kind of what I found myself liking this week was I just kept switching from one to the other. And it was kind of a perfect, perfect experience, if you will. Mm. All right. Vincent, what do you got?
Well, mine is somewhat related. I mean, it's kind of the same situation you are in where, you know, at home enjoying the HomePod and it's booming bass and I'm still kind of sad that it's going away. But I am looking forward to the next version of it if something with a screen. And also, like, it's just listening to music with the AirPods. But I guess the thing that I like this week has been just Apple Music in general. Mm. And I just kind of did some digging to kind of understand where it came from. And and where it's at. And I mean, it's quite a service, and obviously it's something that stemmed out of the iTunes Music when we were all like ripping our you remember the little nuclear symbol or whatever that you could rip your CDs? You'd have this on your iPod and all that stuff. But like, man, when the music streaming service came out, it has been it's been a game changer. But like, it's weird because you time flies so fast, but you realize that Apple Music has only been around, or the streaming service has been around since 2015 after they acquired Beats and the Beats subscription service, and they merged that with the iTunes radio service and everything else. And And it's interesting that in terms of the way that they approached the problem with like Spotify and Pandora, it was all ad based. So kind of a running theme here, but they don't have an ad supported model. It's it was all a subscription, and you know, and I found out that or I learned that the music industry actually wanted the price that they're charging now, the $10 a month, is something that the music industry kind of weighed in on because they wanted to actually charge less. So they want a little bit more of the royalties, I'm sure, and make money off of that. But, you know, there's the whole like evolution of music and how it was stored in the cloud. And you're still going through that issue with iCloud and that music match and songs and things that are swapped out. And you're like, wait a minute, this isn't my song. But yeah, they did go through this process where they switched out songs that did not have DRM or digital rights management attached to them. But they haven't publicly acknowledged that in terms of Apple Music. But what I like is the fact that it's 70 million songs, right? And I go through this thing once in a while with my family where I'm like, I don't really listen to just pop music. I don't just have it playing. But you know, you come across pop music because you can't avoid it, right? And you're like, hey, well, that's a nice song, but I have no idea who the artist is.
Right.
I have no idea what the name of the song is. And so I'll go through the Apple Music pop list, hit list, you know, one by one. I'm going, oh, wait a minute, I know this song. I had no idea. And I could add it to my library. And I'm like, oh, I like this. I'm gonna continue listening to it. And I didn't know that I liked this artist. Which is really just fun to do in general. But right now, I mean, besides the 70 million music library, which, you know, Amazon has that, Spotify has about 60, Pandora has about 30 million. But what other things that you should know is that Apple does, because when it's delivering this music, it is compressed at 256 kilobits per second. It's not lossless, but Amazon does. I mean, Amazon's HD service does, if you're like really into that. And another service is Tidal, I think we talked about them, out of Norway.
Tidal, T-I-D-A-L, right?
Yeah.
Who just bought the full
experience. I mean, maybe using that to listen with your AirPods Max.
Isn't Twitter buying them?
Somebody bought them.
I think Jack Dorsey, Twitter, or whatever it is,
So that should be really neat. They have currently what Apple has currently 60 million subscribers as of 2019 or something like that, which is crazy. Now you can get it for what, $10 a month for a single license. I buy it with the one bundle, but if you can buy it for a family for like $15, again, it's no ads or anything like that. But the other thing that I was uncovered while I was digging through this is, you know, and this – it was weird because in October of 2020, they announced Apple Music TV, right? And I completely like just for some reason, it was just like passed by me. But this literally is, you know, it brings you back to the days of MTV and VH1 where you had like, you know, just music videos playing. And the funny thing is it's really hard to find because the UI is not all that great, to be honest, in terms of discovering things. It's definitely angle towards personalizing delivery of things that you might like or things that are similar. But finding Apple Music TV, it's actually under the easiest place to find it is under the Apple TV app. And they have tiles for that. But under Apple Music, the app, you have to scroll all the way down the bottom and it says music videos and or maybe under a section called 20 or on the air 24/7 or something like that. And you can just click on that and watch it stream music videos, which is in high def, and it's fantastic. And just having it play, I don't know how it's curated in terms of what it's going to stream or what it's going to come up next, but it's pretty neat just to know it's there. I think that they made a big deal out of it, but somehow they buried it inside of Apple Music and Apple TV. I'm looking forward to using it a little bit more and maybe having it play on the TV, on the background. Oh, or whatever. Cool.
That would be neat. I like that.
Yeah. But yeah, that's what I like this week is Apple Music and just discovering all the things that are out there. I don't know what y'all's go-to music station is. For me, it's just jazz piano most of the time coming out of the HomePod.
I change a lot. It's like it depends on the mood I'm in, what I'm going to listen to. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of frustrating because there's almost too much to choose from.
Yeah. What is 70 million? Exactly.
Yeah, it was a lot easier when I kind of knew it all, you know, what was there. Right. But now it's like even just being in a discovery mode. It's like click on new music. I just want to kind of scan through this stuff to see if there's anything I like. But it's weird. Too. It's strange.
I'm just like play top 20. I've done that, and I'm like, okay, you know, and I keep thinking about when I was a kid, you know, and I'm like, my parents are like, that song stuff's crap. But although, you know, classic rock sort of bridges my family with me, my parents with me, because classic rock kind of everyone likes classic rock. But anyway, I do the same thing. I'll just say what's out there, and I'll listen. But most of the time, my difference is I'll either go classic rock or I'll ask for a specific artist. So I'm kind of narrow in my music, which is unfortunate. I should kind of open it up a lot more.
Yeah. You should. For me, I just wanted to see how bassy can the HomePod go. And put some R&B on there.
It can get really bassy. That's a good test for the minis, too, to see how far you can push it. You know, see what you can get out of it. That's great. Cool.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, Chris. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, sorry, I was jumping the gun. Those are both good ones, and I guess mine's the same flavor where I was talking about services. And I was just kind of thinking this week, as yesterday when I was putting my notes together about what I like this week, and I'm just starting to use things more and more and use things less and less. For example, that dang Apple remote for the Apple TV, I don't even touch that thing anymore. But I'm trying to use habits better. So I'm always using that remote app on my watch now. And now that I've got four HomePods or HomePod minis in my house and a bunch of TVs, you know, you got to select the right one on the remote, but it certainly lets you do that very effectively. And then you can just control the whole dang TV from your watch. I love it. I love it a lot. Mm-hmm. And then I've also started using just verbal commands with our favorite person. And, you know, a lot of times you're navigating from Netflix to Disney Plus to HBO. You just ask so-and-so to do it, and they do it for you. And they can play the next episode up for a certain show you're watching. I started doing that a couple weeks ago. I'm like, holy cow, why haven't I been doing this all the time? So I'm integrating verbal as well as my watch and all the old, you know, the stuff that gets you frustrated, like losing that remote. It's just a thing of the past. So, as you guys with the music and the sound, I'm finding that with kind of the connection of watching. And again, I don't watch any TV. Everything I do is streaming. And, I've made it a lot more, not, I guess, fun is part of it, but much more effective in navigating around and getting things done.
Yeah, that's a big rumor right now is the new Apple TV would have a new remote.
Don't need it.
Well, yeah.
I'm just kidding.
No.
I can always use one, but.
Yeah. You're a perfect example of why they need to go and look at this because it can be very frustrating. And the interface is not the same when you go app to app, you know, as far as using that remote. So I can see how that would be better what you're doing, Chris. So.
Yeah. And I was also thinking what would I like and what I would like to do is sit down and say, hey, so-and-so, what are all of my active shows? And it would list them there. And then I can say, play that one next. Right. Cause I was going through it the other day. I don't watch a lot of stuff to tell you the truth. But I maybe do one or two streaming shows a night at the most. But I have a lot of active different things I'm watching. So I'd like to just get a list of them and where the heck they are. Like I started watching a couple of new things on Apple TV that came out. And I'm like, oh, where was that again? You know? And so that's what kind of confuses me now is where everything is.
Well, the Apple TV I'm going to call it a button. The first selection on your Apple TV that says Apple TV mm-hmm. should keep a running list of everything you're currently watching.
Of most recents? Yeah, yes. But it's everything. It's like everything.
What do you mean? No.
It's across all your services, right?
Netflix. Yes, and, it's across everything. Yeah, yeah. It's, yeah. But the next
step. For me, I get lost. I'm watching, you know, For All Mankind, and I'm like, where is it? Because I don't know what you're
saying. Same here.
About.
That's what I'm saying.
But it should pop right up there where you left off. It should say episode 5. The next one is right there. You just click it and watch it.
Yeah. I still dig around.
No, see, I noticed like I use that bar all the time as far as what's coming up next. If there's a new episode, it'll pop up. If I don't see it there, I know there's not a new episode. So I don't even have to go digging for it. Mm-hmm. And it keeps
that's true.
And it keeps track of where I am in that series. Even if I'm binging a series that's already released, I just got to click that and go right to the next one. Now, it doesn't work all the time. Every now and then it won't. It'll somehow start it over at episode 1 or something gets confused if it's like HBO Max or something. And it really makes me upset that I have to now dig into HBO Max and find it. But most of the time, it's right there. And yeah, that's all I use. Sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I learned something today. I've seen that. I've ignored it. I'm going to start using it because that's exactly what I'm looking for.
Right up at the top. Now, there's a couple services it doesn't do. If you're watching something on Netflix, it will never show up there.
Okay.
Netflix
well,
does
now I'm just using
Netflix doesn't. Yeah. Disney does.
Yeah. Disney does. HBO Max does. A bunch of others.
Prime?
Yes, Prime does.
Prime does, yeah.
Yeah. What else is there? Paramount does. Trying to think. Everything
I think what it is, though, you know, is the tile is a picture of the episode rather than of the show. So you're looking for the icon, like what it is, because they change it up all the time. So I'm looking for the actual title frame for All Mankind and not reading. I'm looking for the picture. And I see, you know, like I pull it up, I see like season 2, episode 6, they're a screenshot of the actual show and I don't recognize it.
But normally, no, the button, those, that what's next thing is usually the logo or the icon for the show for that season. No. And the, if you mouse or you mouse over it, if you have it highlighted, let's put it that way. You move over to it. Mm-hmm. Behind it, big on the screen, will be an image from that episode.
Right.
But the actual thing should be just for that show, whatever it is.
Take a look again.
Take a look again.
I will too.
It's something I use quite a lot. Unfortunately, too much. We watch too much TV, but you get hooked on shows. You know,
I think it's because my kids are on there. And so I have like 15 episodes of something that's up next.
Now that's a problem. That's a big problem, especially if you have a family account and you have other people using it. Your show may be 15 deep. You'll have to scroll sideways, you know, to find, wait. Oh, there it is. It's there.
Yeah.
Well, it should know my voice. So when I ask, it should know my voice when I ask so-and-so and listen there.
Yeah, I mean, I see what Apple is trying to do with it, and it is pretty nice. But when all the services don't play well with it, it becomes a problem. You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, just a quick update here. I just bought 2 Mac stands on Kickstarter.
Oh, there it is.
And I did it. I pulled the trigger. So.
All right.
Yeah, nice. I couldn't resist. So we'll see what happens. This
is fantastic.
Yep. While we were waiting, you gave me too much time, guys.
Tom went silent for a bit there.
Wait, that was our fault?
It is. It's totally your fault.
I get that from my family all the time. I don't need it from my podcast buddies, okay?
Anything else before we update our watch to the latest security update? Please do that. Everybody do that. You need
to do it.
Do it now. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. Thank you, Vincent and Chris, for being here. I really do appreciate it. Thanks to everyone out there for listening. If you'd like to support our show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/AppleWatchcast. It's a great way to help us to continue to produce the show. So check it out at patreon.com/AppleWatchcast. Links to stuff we talk about can be found on our website at applewatchcast.com. Subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or any other podcast service you prefer. If you have a question about the Apple Watch or about our show, send us an email at comments@applewatchcast.com. Look for us and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. As always, thanks for listening. Stay safe. And until our next show, you're on your own time.
Remember to rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts.